Radio. This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets. It's O-Behave with Arden Moore, the show that teaches you how to have harmony in the household with your pets. Join Arden as she travels coast to coast to help millions better understand why cats and dogs do what they do. Get the latest scoop on famous faces, their perfectly pampered pets, and who's walking who in Rin Tin Tinseltown. From famous pet experts and best-selling authors to television and movie stars, you'll get the latest buzz from wagging tongues and tails, garner great pet tips, and have a doggone fur-flying fun time. So get ready for the pause and applause as we unleash your O-Behave host, America's pet edutainer, Arden Moore.
Welcome to the O-Behave Show on Pet Life Radio. I'm your host, Arden Moore. Now, for this episode, we're going to speed forward to the future. I'm talking like 10,000 years. We all know that our dogs are quite adaptable. But how would global warming or a new ice age alter their looks? Come on, it's time to unleash our imaginations. And here to help us is America's pet advocate. He's a great, great veterinarian and a good friend. We're talking Dr. Ernie Ward. Welcome back to the show, Dr. Ernie.
Oh, gosh, Arden, thank you so much. Your listeners are the greatest. And this is a really kind of an interesting topic that maybe people haven't given some thought to, you know?
I like it. I mean, you know, you have teamed up with BasePaws. This is a pet genetic company. And you all are trying to scientifically predict how global warming or a new ice age is going to alter the appearance of many, many dog breeds. And I think you're also hopefully going to share a little bit about what scientists speculate how dogs maybe on Mars would look like.
That's right.
You gotta admit, that's wild.
It is. But Arden, these are actually serious questions that demand serious scrutiny, right? And we're not the first to look at this. I mean, Oxford researchers have looked at this over time. And really what people are most concerned about is like, what changes would happen to like the plants that we eat? What about water and minerals? And how would we live, right? And more importantly, if thousands of years of climate change occur in the future, how would that change our own physiology? And so all we did was sort of take some of that research that's in existence out there already and some very, very, you know, well, you know, researched studies. And they say, okay, what if we just use our imagination, as you mentioned, and applied this to dogs? And I'll tell you, I do believe that a lot of this stuff is going to come to fruition. My dear friend, Stephen Kotler, who's a very famous author, he writes all these books, Abundance, you know, and he has teamed up with a lot of futurists. And this goes back to a conversation Stephen and I were having 20 years ago, because we were worried about the coming resource scarcity, right? So what that means out there to the listeners is that food prices, water scarcity, all those things would impact our ability to have pets, right? Because that becomes kind of a luxury whenever you can barely feed and provide water for your family. So Steve and I have been running these thought experiments for 20 or more years amongst ourselves and some of our close friends. But you know, it was really fun to put it into action and then actually generate some interesting images using AI.
Oh, yeah. And we hopefully are going to be showing those images with a link to this episode. So everybody, you're going to get a look at what a beagle might look like or a Great Dane and things like that. So, I mean, Dr. Ernie, there's different three scenarios. So let's go to global warming for 200, please. So how could our dogs adapt to global warming? And I think the fur is gone.
Yeah, right. Because heat is going to be the biggest enemy of us, right? And so obviously preserving hydration, you know, that's going to be also paramount to survival. And, you know, and one of the things too, we were talking to some journalists and one of the skeptics said, well, oh, you know, you're just assuming that these changes occur on their own. But remember, when it comes to dogs, we select the traits that make sense. So, you know, in the future, these changes will be accelerated by human breeding and interactions, right? I mean, just like we've seen a preponderance of mixed breed dogs, all the doodles out there, if you will. Like we're doing that. The reason that doodles are popular is because they meet a need, a current need of current urban society, right? We wanted dogs that were a little smaller, a little more trainable, you know,
and that's hairy.
Right, exactly. So I believe that will, all these changes will be accelerated. So we're looking at thinner coats, obviously, right? We're probably looking at some dispersal of heat, which would be like maybe larger ears, right?
Oh, really? Oh, my dog Kona has big ears. She's looking. She's happy about that. I want your big ear dogs. Yeah.
And maybe even the appendages would be either shorter or longer. And there's a couple of scenarios that could impact that, right? Because obviously it depends on really what we breed them for. My guess, I surmise that we'll build smaller dogs, if you will, because they require less energy. And that means, of course, less heat to dissipate. Also, it requires less water and it enables them to preserve it. Also, coloration, Arden, right? I mean, so we're probably going to see lighter colors to help reflect back UV rays to also keep them cool. So, you know, these are just some fun things that we're looking at.
All the little dogs in the world right now are clapping their paws because they're being branded as purse my ride dogs, but they may be the dogs in a global warming 10,000 year scenario.
Without a doubt. And one of the things too, if we look at sort of how human physiology and our own morphology, our body shapes and sizes change, remember that if you look at people that live around the equator of the planet, right? So the warmest regions around the center of the earth, those people tend to be smaller in stature, okay? And this is because, again, to preserve, you know, hydration and use less resources and all that sort of stuff. It wasn't really until humans began going into colder climates up northern latitudes that we started seeing increases in size. And there's a lot of reasons for this, including preservation of heat, right, to warm up and actually to be able to store extra food because, you know, we might have some intervals between. So again, just some all speculation, but 10,000 years into the future, I think that today's dogs will look largely the same, but there'll be some significant changes. The other thing is we don't know what's happening underneath the fur, right? That's where I think the real adaptations are going to occur. I think these dogs are going to, again, improve their kidney functions to conserve water and electrolytes more efficiently. I also believe that hormonally, they're going to change probably the way their reproductive patterns are because, right, with if we
not
see
climate change.
Not
have as many puppies?
Not
or maybe?
Have as many, exactly. And maybe only once a year instead of multiple times a year. Right. So, you know, for most dogs, they go through two heat cycles currently, and maybe that gets reduced to one again, just because of resource scarcity and survivability and so forth. So I think that we're going to see some of those physiological changes. You know, one of the things we were talking about also as we were brainstorming around this is like, what adaptations can you make physiologically to protect yourself against radiation injury? Right. So there might be some different cells that would become more abundant, if you will, to help protect us. And again, just what would we look at as far as like the DNA, like the telomeres, which is the end of it, which kind of is that biological time clock, you know, that we talk about a lot. So the length of telomeres indicates lifespan. So would that change?
You said something, you all, and this is fascinating. I mean, I've known you for many years, and you are my man. You started the Association for the Prevention of Pet Obesity. You did a great book called Chow Hounds. You're an amazing guy. You got to say, this was kind of a cool little opportunity for you to peek into the future. Take a furry canine globe and shake it and say what's going to be happening, right?
Oh, yeah. And again, you know, Basepaws by Zoetis, which, you know, Zoetis is the world's largest animal health company. They're looking at these things.
Yeah, these are big players.
Yeah, they're imagining, you know, the future in 100 and 300 years, right? I mean, these are companies that are going to be around for a long time, and they have been around for a long time. And so, you know, for us, it's just a fun way to kind of take genetics and say what kind of changes might be accelerated or adaptations might, you know, be generated by climate change. So the first scenario, of course, is the most likely based on the current science, and that is a warming planet. But we also looked at a few other scenarios.
And before we go to the side of it, what about the eyes of dogs? If we are in fact going to global warming, how is that going to alter their look or their function?
Yeah, one of the things that I proposed was that we'd see more hooded lenses. So we're actually going to see probably an elongation of the actual eyelids. And more importantly, the eyes would become more sunken into the skull because, again, you know, this abundance of UV radiation is really what's going to tell us. Also, I think probably the iris is going to adapt to become smaller because right now dogs are excellent in low light. But in the future, especially if we see longer days or less, you know, protection in the atmosphere from UV radiation, they may want to constrict further, similar to cats, perhaps. Now that's a slightly different issue, but you know, for us, we're looking at, I think the eyes will be also one of those things. But the biggest take home that I think we should all realize is that as our lives change, as it becomes hotter, as water becomes a prized commodity, right? As food becomes more expensive in the future, and I hope none of this happens, right? But if it does, then we're going to have to adapt our pets to coincide with that. And so that means that maybe feeding a 150-pound dog dog and giving them water and shelter and cooling them might be an economic challenge, a burden for us. So we might say instead of 150-pound dogs, all dogs start to look more like they're 10 or 20-pound dogs.
Yeah, that's interesting. Hey, we're speaking with Dr. Ernie Ward. Everybody knows him. He's America's pet advocate. He's teamed up with Base Paws. And I love this episode. We are the longest running pet podcast on the planet. We've been on since 07. Maybe we'll be on in 10,000 years if we figure out how to make my producer, Mark Winter, and I live forever. That could be possible because this is the kind of episode we're covering. But hey, everybody, when we come back, we're going to flip it. What would happen if we get into a new ice age and how would our dogs look and act? So stick around, sit, stay. We'll be right back.
Time for a walk on the red carpet, of course. All Behave will be back in a flash right after these messages.
Take a bite out of your competition. Advertise your business with an ad in Pet Life Radio podcasts and radio shows. There is no other pet-related media that is as large and reaches more pet parents and pet lovers than Pet Life Radio. With over 7 million monthly listeners, Pet Life Radio podcasts are available on all major podcast platforms. And our live radio stream goes out to over 250 million subscribers on iHeartRadio, Odyssey, TuneIn, and other streaming apps. For more information on how you can advertise on the number one pet podcast and radio network, visit PetLifeRadio.com/advertise today.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
This is Paul Schaefer from The Late Show with David Letterman.
And his daughter, Victoria Schaefer.
And you are listening to Arden Moore on The O'Behave Show.
On Pet Life Radio.
Please tune in.
We're back from the lot. Just checked the paper and we had a record showing at the box. The letterbox, that is. Now back to O'Behave. Here's Arden.
Welcome back to the O'Behave Show on Pet Life Radio. I'm your host, Arden Moore. I'm yapping with Dr. Ernie Ward. And he has teamed up with Base Paws. And they are talking about some interesting scenarios. And I know you are a major advocate of Mother Earth. And dogs and cats, and I guess you like people too. So let's flip the scenario. We're in a new ice age. What happens? How are dogs going to adapt?
Yeah, and you know, I know all the talk is about a hot planet, but it wasn't that long ago that scientists were speculating we could be entering into a new ice age. So, you know, these are, again, the climate is very complex. And so, you know, we're looking at lots of different scenarios. So what happens in the future if suddenly everything is frostbitten, right? If suddenly, you know, we've got icicles hanging from our dens and at dinner time, you know, we have to sit around a big fire to keep warm. And so, you know, again, as we mentioned with climate change in a hot environment, we also realize that people are going to breed and select dog traits that are beneficial in a colder climate. And so this really kind of goes into some of the common sense things you'd think about. I do want to talk about the physiological changes that we speculate. But number one, we're going to see thicker fur coats, right? So more dense coats. Just imagine, you know, a dog needing to protect itself. They need their own fur coat to insulate against that. So that's going to be one thing that we would definitely see: longer, thicker fur coats, just like you would associate today.
I got to step in here. All the Bernese Mountain Dogs listening right now are going, yeah, Dr.
Rejoice.
Ernie,
we told you. That's right. Even though they're in North Carolina or South Carolina, we're preparing for the future. The other thing, too, is going to be body fat, right? Because that is the biggest insulator we have against the cold. And honestly, as humans migrated north in northern latitudes, you know, thousands and thousands of years ago, we also saw people get larger, as we mentioned in the last segment. And so one of the things they did was store more body fat. And that wasn't just for energy, but also for insulation. So I expect to see larger dogs with more body fat, especially, you know, when we look at where the body fat is distributed. And there's two different types. And those of you that have followed me in my fight against obesity all these years know I talk about the two different types of fats. And the one fat we talk about so often, which is the more harmful fat, is the white fat. Okay, so this is the belly fat, if you will. You know, people, when they think of harmful effects, we think that. But remember, there's another type of fat that we all have as mammals called brown fat, which actually is physiologically active in different ways, okay? It's a better source of energy whenever we need to store it up. But more importantly, it's also a better insulator. And so this is why you tend to see brown fat in animals stored along their backs, okay? And their sides. So I think you'll probably see physiologically an adaptation there to go towards more brown fat, again, for energy and insulation. We also expect to see things, you know, again, like these are dogs that may have to scavenge more, right? So they may be, you know, in a cold climate having to go and hunt. And so I do expect them to be a little more wolf-like, or we wind up breeding, as we did with climate change in the warm environment, to make smaller dogs to be able to keep inside, you know, to keep warm and so forth. But again,
you know, Chihuahuas are not really happy about this scenario.
Oh,
right?
Yeah. No. But long-haired Dachshunds say, hey, we told you so. That's okay. Right. So
well,
everybody likes
it. Fun.
It is fun. And so what we did, too, is we took a lot of these different morphological or body shape and characteristics, and we put them into an AI generator. And we said, okay, here's what Dr. Ward is saying, and here's what some of our geneticists are saying. You know, what would this look like? And so that was really a fun part of it. So there are some sophisticated AI image generators out there. So you take in and you say, what would this look like over the next 10,000 years? And I hope everybody that's listening can go check out those images, because they're, well, at first, you know, they're comical. I'll be the first to admit, you know, they're kind of like, oh, okay. But then you start to realize, wow, this could actually happen. You know, I get where they're going with this stuff. But again, I think with hot climates, you know, Arden, the bigger changes are going to be underneath the fur, the physiological adaptations, how we burn fat, how we store energy, you know, what processes for proteins and minerals and so forth. I think really, for me, I always go back to nutrition and how do we survive physiologically. And I think that, again, you know, we're going to conserve water. We're going to have to do more with less food or calories. And we're going to need to store that in a way that actually benefits us from a heat standpoint.
And we may have to go to Mars.
Yep. That was actually the most fun. And I'll tell you, Arden, in my last book, The Clean Pet Food Revolution, I actually talked about this, you know, because right now, and several years ago, I was invited to talk to a group of folks who were talking about space colonization. And at that time, they were really looking more towards the International Space Station and so forth, and further colonization maybe on the moon and Mars. And as I was talking to these folks, it was glaringly obvious that they had omitted any type of companion animal. Now, life on another planet, life in space without any animal compatriot, I think is missing the human element. Like, I think that's not even the human existence. And I made this argument. I said, I don't think that humans, we didn't evolve in the absence of all other animal life. So I think you're taking a big part of humanity away if you don't try to incorporate animals into space. And so one of the things we did look at was, what would that look like? And again, this is something that myself, Stephen Kotler, and others, you know, we've been brainstorming around this for a while, because we really are encouraging folks, if you're listening and you're involved with some of the Mars colonization, remember, I mean, I'm that guy who's been talking about it for years.
Who let the dogs out in Mars.
Right. But I think it's just important part of being a human being. But regardless, and so we started looking at, what would that look like? A, they have to be small dogs, right? Because on space, you know, you've got a couple of things, but the key element that we have to conserve is oxygen. So you've got to have a dog, or, you know, or a cat. And look, I'll take any mammal. In fact, we did talk about, you know, like gerbils and hamsters and small mammals, right? Because I think that humans just need something else other than a plant or a fungi to take care of in
this
space.
This is where the Chihuahuas are now back to loving you.
They are back, yeah. Oh, man, any of the toy breeds are probably listening right now a little more attentively. And so, you know, we do know that small to conserve oxygen. I do think that there are some ways physiologically to adapt them to low oxygen environments. And so I think that we can actually enhance that for sure. And this has to do with red blood cells, of course. So density of red blood cells, numbers, you know, per liter. So I think that there's some ways that we could even, you know, sort of quickly adapt dogs to do better in a lower oxygen environment, to conserve oxygen for humans, of course, and plants, because we gotta eat up there. And so I think that we would do that small. They would have probably less hair than now. And this is really, you know, one of the things that we were brainstorming early on was, this is probably just a hygienic issue, right? I mean, because if you've got fur flying on a space station or on a enclosed colonization on Mars, then that's going to maybe plug up air purifiers. And so we realized that we need things that don't shed a lot, you know. So early on, we recognized that could be a thing. Also, we talked about hypoallergenicity, right? And while you can't truly design a hypoallergenic dog, although I think with some of the genetic interventions that are coming, we may be able to, but I think that's something we've got to consider because, again, people in a very enclosed space sharing recycled air, we don't want to also recycle any allergens that could then cause a problem for humans. So I think all these things really come into play. The other thing that really, you know, we didn't talk about so much in this thing, but something that my friends and I have talked about is how do we reclaim waste more efficiently, yeah. right? Because so dogs that urinate and defecate. And so I think there are ways to transfer that into energy and to, you know, nutrients, for example, for the plants that might maybe we're growing or the fungi that we're growing up there in space. So again, being very smart about it. But I'll say too, to the listeners, the main point I want to make is that when we talk about colonization of space for right. humans, let's not forget the important role that animals have played in getting us to where we are today. I do not believe that humanity wouldn't be where we are today without animals, right? And so I know that a lot of my colleagues say, oh, but Ernie, we've transcended that.
No, we know. No.
I think it's a humanity, right? I do think there's a difference. And I don't think that we can find this in an AI computer simulation. I think that if humans are going to colonize space, I want it to be, I'd love to see a dog by my side.
And speaking of that, who's the dog by your side these days?
still border terriers. You know, we kind of got into those. We have a border terrier rescue now, Jenny, and she has a little physical issue, but she does really, really well. And, you know, so I'm a big fan of border terriers, small dogs. So, hey, we're preparing for climate change here on the coast of North Carolina already. So, and we keep her nice and short.
My terrier mix, Kona, is loving you even more now because she's like, yeah, terriers rock. Terriers rock.
They do. And you know, and we describe border terriers as a plucky breed. And so if you know, you know. I think the temperament, when we do look in the future, I mean, the temperament is going to be really essential, right? Because we've got to have dogs that really can, you know, coexist with us maybe in some challenging times.
Wow. You've got to admit, this has been a fascinating dive into what could be in 10,000 years. None of us will be around right now to prove it or disprove it, but it really does work your brain muscles too, doesn't it? In a different way.
It really does. And again, we didn't even touch on what if we could manipulate the DNA, right? Because I think that actually a lot of cool stuff could happen that way as far as preventing disease, you know, enhancing physiological mechanisms and systems. So, I mean, there's a lot more that could be done, but, you know, let's just kind of look at it in current day lens and kind of move forward. But if you get a chance, check out some of those images because I think they're quite fascinating.
Now, there's two places I want people to dash off to. Let's go to Dr. Ernie Ward. Correct.com.
That's right. Dr. Ernie Ward at
basepaws.com. Did I get that right?
You got it right.
Oh my gosh. Any parting message? We just got a couple of minutes that you want to say to all the people out there because you are the man that is trying to keep our pets from getting too fat and trying to save our planet, looking at plant-based proteins. I mean, what a mission you have carved out for yourself.
Well, you know, I'm optimistic. I'm one of those people that continues to see the glass half full. I know there's a lot of challenges ahead of us, but I see a bright future 10,000 years into the future, whether it's hot or cold or on Mars. I think that it's going to be really fulfilling, and I hope to see our companions next to us.
And I hope that they deliver pizza. That's just my humble wish.
I'm with you on that. I am with you on that.
Hey, everybody. We've been speaking with America's pet advocate. He is Dr. Ernie Ward. And I have so much enjoyed this episode. Wow. Make that bow wow. I also want to give a shout out to my producer, Mark Winter. He is the executive producer of Pet Life Radio, the largest, oldest pet radio network on the planet. And maybe someday, Mars. Hey, please check me out. Subscribe to my YouTube. Easy, Arden Moore. And until next time, this is your flea-free host, Arden Moore, delivering just two words to all you 2, 3, and 4-leggers out there. Obehave.
Coast to coast and around the world, it's Obehave with Arden Moore. Find out why cats and dogs do the things they do and get the latest buzz from wagging tongues and tails in Rin Tin Tinseltown. From famous pet experts and best-selling authors to television and movie stars, you'll get great tail-wagging pet tips and have a fur-flying fun time. Obehave with America's pet edutainer, Arden Moore. Every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.